Okay, guys, this is our discussion on the. Not working. And now? Better? Okay. Much better. Okay. So this is the pointer is over there. Our discussion on the what you see in the title here. That is an overview of the component separation work, which was done so far for Planck. This is the outline of the talk. So we will review the progresses that the field had thanks to the Planck data and the CMB solutions that we present. There is a substantial work in terms of consistency and robustness of the data. So for these, for the results that we are presenting, the work, let's say we think the solutions are pretty robust. And to the point of being quantitative and to claim that several of the claims which are relevant for cosmology have been done using component separation products. Of course, we will review in diffuse foregrounds and then conclude. So there are contributions from people. Jean-François Cardoso should have been here talking about a portion of these topics, but he apologizes because of he stayed in France because of a last-minute passport problem. The cosmology from component separation is a novelty of the Planck analysis with respect to previous ones. And there is a talk which is forthcoming by Grassa focusing on that part. And in the component separation paper, most of the results on these programs are from the team working at the Commander Ruler. It is everything is planned as a collaborative effort. So everything that you see has been possible thanks to a group, which is the component separation, which worked extensively to achieve the results that you will see. Okay, let's see the first section of these things. So what's component separation? We know now it's a rather mature field, so we're going simple in these things. So you have the data. So the unknowns are your astrophysical contributions, diffuse ones, and the CMB. They are mixed in frequencies by a matrix which you call mixing matrix, which brings the components to frequencies, making the data together with the noise. So you have your beautiful scheme here. And it is a pretty defined problem, which of these are all matrices which you can characterize by covariance of the noise, parameters of all these things, the data, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what if you are thinking to the general philosophy which brought to the community, the Planck collaboration to study the algorithms that you see in the paper, here is the answer. So foregrounds, no? Diffuse foregrounds. So the diffuse signal from the galaxy which is in front of the CMB. So there are two possibilities, no? You know nothing or you know something. Vero? Yeah. Bene. So if you know nothing, you are lost. You say you try to minimize the variance of your moon. You mix the frequency channels in order to minimize the variance because more and to keep, let's say, to look for the solution which, the minimum variance solution which scales as a black body. The variance, linear combination of the channels, internal linear combination. And if you know something, you model what you know and fit. So you do this. You can do the both steps, not in the pixel domain, or in the pixel domain. Same when you know something, you can look for the solution not in the pixel domain or in the pixel domain. Being slightly specific with words that my colleagues like. So the minimum variance solution, not in the pixel domain, for Planck is looked in a what we hope is an optimized space localized in the harmonic and space domain, which is called needlet. You find foregrounds in areas of the space harmonically and spatially, which they have different relevance. Or you go plainly in the pixel domain. Same things for the modeling and fitting. You do parametrization in the harmonic domain and fit, or you do the pixel domain parametrization, which is convenient, and it is the basis of the foreground analysis, because physical parameters of foregrounds in the pixel domain corresponds directly to physical quantities. So here are our four algorithms, which we think represent a complete battery for looking for the solution that you're looking for in the data, because of the reason that I just said. I think everything else that has been proposed in the literature, let's say, is a sort of marginal or doesn't exist, basically. So these are the solutions. You see the good face of them. We give a few details on how they are obtained in the following. So this is the beautiful sea of things, because you see by eye you see this remarkable similarity between the solution, with the exception of imperfections at very low galactic latitudes. That is the only things that your eye is able to catch at this stage over the full sky. These are the solutions that you find on the archive. There was an immense work for making these things robust, and equally immense work to get quantitative claims out of these things. So the Planck implemented what we think is the most reliable simulation of the entire mission by using the so-called full focal plane simulations, which are different series. Now the one which you find in the paper is the sixth, in which we take the best parameters that are measured usually in flight, and you simulate with the software machinery the whole mission that you are looking. So we run on that things and on data in parallel. The instrumental error is propagated through the what you know in terms of matrices of your variance and covariance matrices for the noise. And in addition to that, you divide the pointing period in two halves. You run separately on you apply the pipeline separately on the two little Planck, you can say. And you do subtractions in the end for characterizing for achieving the most sophisticated noise realization that you can have on your outputs. The main beam is measured in flight and taken into account in the analysis, and the claims which you get out of these results have been done on cosmology based on autospectra, primordial non-Gaussianity, all comes from that, and gravitational length. And this is the incomplete list of papers in which the results for component separation have some impact. One of the most spectacular is constraints on the study of the power spectrum of the CMB and cosmological parameters, which you will see in Grass's talk in a moment. So that was the good part. Now the nasty, there are many nastinesses, many brutte cose. So you can start to take differences between the different solutions, and you find that especially where the galaxy is very bright, our simplifications of the problem are, let's say, not enough to achieve a satisfactory reconstruction of the CMB at all latitudes. So by pair differences here, you see that there are significant differences, which are so you see different signs of the residuals here in all the different. So you don't know if there is one perfect reconstruction and which one is this from the data. But you see the level of differences is still high. So the galaxy is very complicated at low galactic latitudes, and these differences are pointing your eye precisely to this issue. You can take a standard deviation over methodologies over your solutions and see the same things. There is an intense area of disagreement in galactic latitudes corresponding to 10 or less. Jean-François prepared these summary slides back in the meeting in ESLAP, which you see in a nutshell, the specifications of the various the maps which were produced. SMICA you find in papers recommended for analysis, especially on non-Gaussianity, because of the reason that we'll see in a moment. Essentially, when we run on simulations, we see for that the lowest level of residuals. Okay, of the SMICA map, in the paper, you find a version in which the central part is not not properly treated, and on the archive now you find a version which is effectively all sky, but you have to remember that the part inside this white line here has been impainted, so the signal there is completely artificial, generated on the basis of the constraint realization. So it is used for just inside this region. The rest is physical signal. Okay. Now a few highlights on the component separation, the sophistication of component separation, which was possible thanks to the capability of the experiment. In this plot, you see the weights for one of the solutions, the spectral matching corresponding to the SMICA solution across the weights. So L by L, you see how much of the frequency channel shown there is present into your solution. You see there are wide variations of these weights in amplitude and across the energy, the angular domain. You can do the same game with the noise levels and see this plot here, which is the contribution of the noise, how it varies over the angular domain. So in this case the solution is spectral matching, so is the fourth category that we highlighted, in which the matching is performed in the harmonic domain. So you do a parameterization of the mixing matrix. One column is known because it is the CMB. All the others are parameters that you can fit over the angular domain, in each being the angular domain. And it's called semi-parameter or semi-physical or similar because in the harmonic, this is CMB targeted. In the harmonic domain, physical the parameters that are represent your ignorance in the mixes matrix are not corresponding directly to physical parameters of foregrounds, while in the spatial domain they are. And this is an example of comparisons of the various the four approaches, which the mixing matrix is estimated differently. Okay. Another section, the first category that we highlighted in the beginning, the internal linear combination, minimum variance, studied in not in the pixel space. What does it mean? So, when you leave the pixel space, you are allowed to go everywhere. You open an infinite possibility. Okay, so and you can play with infinite possibilities. So the Planck collaboration, let's say, worked and isolated this scheme of the Niglet domain, in which you see localization, in which the internal linear the minimum variance solution was looked for in these areas, which are 20, I think, resembling the galaxy because they trace where the galaxy is more intense in the spatial domain and in the harmonic domain. Okay? It's not the only choice, but it is the choice which allowed to reach the results that you see that you have in the paper. Localization in the spectral and in the harmonic and pixel domain. And you look for internal linear combination. So there is nothing more that you can do with it, other than when you do internal minimum variance approaches, which is a well-defined principle, then you go and so. The best you can do is refine the area, the subsample of the data in which you run. In the Planck collaboration, let's say, achieve this by using the scheme that you see. Third category of the approaches that we adopted, Bayesian inversion of the problem, implemented in the commander ruler code, which is the union of two codes. The commander one is used for solving Markov chains using the Gibbs sampling at intermediate resolution for computational limitations of the problem, and that is the parametric fitting conducted in the pixel domain. So parameters there correspond to CMB and to physical properties of foregrounds. So this is the solution. This is the machinery which produces the foreground solution that you see in the paper. Once the spec, and that was used also in the likelihood analysis, the likelihood paper for Lowell, and less than 50, where the foregrounds are intense, the commander solution was adopted to control foregrounds in that part of the spectrum. Once the solution is achieved at low resolution, you use the spectral parameters that you evaluated with their uncertainty to achieve the high resolution inversion, and that is the ruler. Finally, the last category of the approaches corresponds to the good old template fitting, which is connected with the minimum variance in the pixel domain, essentially taking differences of the frequency channels, eliminates the CMB and leave foreground amplitudes. Then you go to a particular channel. You sum a linear combination of the foreground templates that you obtain that way, and you minimize the variance. And so you achieve CMB cleaning, which is in this way, with template fitting, can be achieved at different frequencies. And in the paper, you find this nice table with these pairwise differences of frequency channels representing foreground templates, which are then summed in the various solutions adopting these weights for achieving the solution. 10 minutes? No, come on. Do you have 45? No? 30. Oh, no, Madonna. Okay. Consistency and robustness. Masks. So the Planck correlation produced two series of masks. One is simply threshold in the sky with this level of intensity. And the other series is produced by each of the four approaches, which produces a confidence mask. Commander ruler for fitting efficiency, because it's the chi-square based, and then thresholding for some of them with very ambitious values of this available sky function. One important point is that when we compare and characterize the solutions, we superimpose the 80% sky fraction cover masking to go so far. This is an anticipation of what GRASSA is about to show, the power spectra of the solution compared with the power spectra of the half-rings pipelines applied to the two mini Planck, the half-ring solution. Differences in the end gives you the realization of the noise in flight. And each solution here is plotted against its own noise realization, which dominates the signal at high and high small angular scales. We conducted differences when running on simulations, and here is the interesting part: the input-output simulations for the four approaches reveals that so far our expectation based on simulations is that the one solution which has the lowest residuals in terms of galactic emission is the harmonic parameterization and fitting, which is seen here by eye, and in the spectra the yellow curve is the one which has the lowest residuals. So that's why we recommend the use of that one for quantitative claims. One important point is that non-Gaussianity studies were conducted also on simulation. And in two series of the full focal plane, in two of them, simulated non-zero non-Gaussianity was inserted. Okay, so we generated full focal plane simulations with non-zero non-Gaussianity detectable around 20, and the tests were conducted blindly, and all the methods reported the detection. In that case, on top of that, the consistency robustness was also conducted in for full focal plane simulations for lensing extraction. You see here the recovery of the lensing for all the four machinery on simulated lensing skies, which demonstrate the component separation is able, doesn't bias even the lensing reconstruction. Okay, the cosmology for component separation is something that you're about to see in GRASSA's talk. There have been already talks at this conference of non-Gaussianity and Duncan's on lensing extraction. These are all using the products from component separation, which are fully listed in this list here. So conclusion for CMB. So this is important. The component separation had a leap forward with Planck data. Okay, there is simply nothing comparable before. It is likely to split from now on into two specializations. Either you do foreground cleaning or CMB extraction for cosmological purposes, or you do foregone reconstruction for astrophysical purposes. We find it extremely difficult to contain everything in one single box, okay, due to the complexity and the capability of the data. So the CMB solutions from a complete set of approaches are consistent on a large scale fraction at a level of 2-point correlation, 2-point statistics, and 3-point statistics. Cosmological parameters based on autospectra from cosmological separation are consistent with the cross-spectra based light today, as Grassa is about to show. And we see consistency for planar longer study and NSTK extractions. The galaxy is complex and doesn't give up at low galactic latitudes. Okay, so I think I have very little time to go over the foregrounds, which, as I told you, are based on the parametrization done in the pixel domain, because that parametrization directly corresponds to physical parameters of foregrounds. One important point: it is impossible to cover all the science related to diffuse foregrounds in one single paper on the foreground section paper of the component separation paper in Planck. Okay, so that's the message. That's why I'm saying it is rather impossible to treat component separation as a single box doing everything. So there are right now ongoing efforts to use ancillary data to improve the separation that it is in the paper, in particular at low frequencies. But you see in the present, the cosmology release, the early papers and the intermediate papers, there were already plenty of results in which component separation algorithms were specialized, targeting specific emissions in specific sky regions. Okay, so the astrophysical investigation that you can do with an instrument like Planck at full glory cannot absolutely be contained in one single paper. Okay, so the foreground model which you find in the paper was pretty simple. It was a single power law with the space variance spectral index and amplitude and low frequency, sensitivity to carbon monoxide emissions, and the thermal dust parameterized by amplitude and emissivity and priorized on the temperature for high frequencies. You see in particular at low frequency the recovery of the spectral index. You see how this figure varies in colors, now going from very synchrotron spectral indices to very free spectral indices in various areas of the sky. So the fitting in the pixel domain pays back, because even modeling everything at low frequencies as a single power law, you are able to see that there are emissions, sky regions with dominated by different emission mechanisms. Okay? The thermal dust is one of the foregrounds which Planck favors in terms of capability of detection. So the range in which Planck observes thermal dust is really extended and enables astrophysicists to do studies corresponding to studying the distribution of the properties of the gas across the galaxy, and in particular to reconstruct the emissivity pattern and the temperature in the frequency range. The capability, I think, from Planck are the frequency interval in which Planck tracks this component is so large that two independent studies are, one in the main component separation work, considering frequencies up to 353, and then focusing on frequencies which are even higher and completely dust dominated. Work is ongoing to compare the solutions in the common frequency band at 353 with scatter plots and other checks. Validation has been conducted on simulations, including spectral indices, difference maps, etc., etc. Oh, this is the last slide that I want to show you. For with simulations, you can do several things. Using the model of the sky that we have, you can highlight regions in which one emission is dominating over the others, and compare with the result in terms of spectral index recovery, and see the resemblance between these two maps, showing that that the fitting as a single power law still is able to isolate and highlight regions which are interested by different emission mechanisms. Okay? So the conclusion for foregrounds are that Planck is able to reconstruct amplitude and spectral indices of low frequencies, CO contributions, and thermal dust amplitude and spectral properties over, let's say, a large part of the sky. The important message is that, as you can see by looking at the Planck paper so far and what is coming next, it is impossible to contain everything that you can do on diffuse foregrounds in one single paper. You need so many specialized approaches are ongoing and already published. So what next? So we have 1 year in which we need to extend the treatment from 1 year of data to 2.5 years of data. There will be one work using non-Planck data in total intensity. And then probably we say goodbye to the old, good old component separation, doing everything with one single algorithm. And we welcome the specialization of algorithms in CMB extraction things and astrophysical reconstruction of foregrounds. Many of the riddles that you have seen, including the complexity of a galaxy at low galactic latitudes, will be under scrutiny for the next year. And then, of course, thank you.
Questions?
Just a simple question about the CO. I mean, of course, that's a very sharp line. So is it possible to map it from the ground with enough sensitivity to just make a template map?
From the ground?
Yeah.
Oh,
with some spectral
instrument. I'm not the right person to answer the question, but I think what I can say is that it was the CO was parameterized a single.
Yeah, so exactly. So I mean, I know that they're working on it in the galactic plan, but I just wonder, you know, is it feasible to go to bigger field and yeah.
Esatto. And so it is very complex. I think if I'm not mistaken, there are nine transitions which are visible in the Planck frequency range. In the solution here, it was modeled as a single one to gain signal to noise ratio to trace the abundance of the regions emitting those things, okay, in order to be able to isolate regions which are interesting for follow-up.
So there's a group of people in Nagoya University in Japan who are, I think, teaming up with the Planck people to do exactly that. So they have this Nanten telescope in Chile, and they can do the mapping of CO lines from ground. Of course, it's not going to be full sky, but they will probably help for some part of the sky.
So actually Planck did a number of maps on the CO issue, which, well, to our despair initially, that is, we have CO maps per line, which are rather noisy, but which are using the fact that we have different detectors, each with a slightly different bandpass. So by comparing within the same frequency band, the various emissions, we have a noisy detection, but say the line 10 or 21 or even 32. So we are actually providing maps of these individual lines, which are making three maps. And then we have something which is part of a component separation, which is assuming that we have a fixed line ratio, which is not really, I mean, these maps show that this is not a true hypothesis over the full sky. But then now, if you are trying to use the full power of having all of the detectors, you assume a fixed line ratio, And then that's what we call our detection map, right, which is what was presented. So this was, now, of course, we would very much welcome that we, rather than we using our photons and our dispersive power to map CO, use an external template and just remove it from the data. That would be more comfortable for us.
If nobody else is going to ask this question, I am. So what I am completely struck by is that COBE to WMAP to Planck, these big regions there and there, the blue and the red, are pretty much, in spite of the fact that they really penetrate into the plane, pretty much look like the same thing. And you know, that's a pretty remarkable thing given the different quote-unquote component separation problems that they face. Your random theorist might say, I would like to do pattern recognition on these regions, but some of this, of course, has been inpainted.
No. The inpainting doesn't have anything to do with these big spots. The inpainting just very so 3% over the galactic.
Yeah. But if you look at the union mask for all of the three component separation methods, it essentially is cutting out most of that stuff. And so when you do analysis based upon that, you aren't picking it up. And so presumably, well, I know that things were done with the much more or less aggressive mask, namely the Smeka mask, and you know you could see a few things. But just as a general comment, should we allow ourselves to be thinking theoretically
to these
about
features
those regions,
yeah, of these inversions here?
Yeah.
Us today.
Theorists will.
So, that's true. What we can say is, in principle, the signals, the level of the signals that you are seeing here is CMB levels, no? Hundreds of micro K, no? You have to compare this thing with residuals that you find in simulations. And some of them are saturated. And let's see the pairwise differences. So the things you're talking about are behind the galaxy here, and here plus something here. So we know that the most advanced, best techniques that we ever invented in the solution disagree, at least in two of the three regions you are mentioning, by this amount, by a number of them. Okay? Now, the signal that you see there is much more than 30 micro K, but there is that that disagreement. Personally, I think most of the pattern that you see there is physical.
CMB is,
yeah, where most,
we're
most,
looking at this really long wavelength phenomenon,
mm-hmm,
that where, just happens to have been rather nastily put in the plane of our galaxy,
yeah,
so that we couldn't do much with it.
And it's not really just in the plane of Kasparov.
I know, but if you're...
Plus, so if, and if I, sure, yeah. And if I'm not wrong, this part of this pattern here is what causes the good fit with the Bianchi 7, whatever, right? Right, the Bianchi 7 feature, Bianchi 7 interpretation has variation large scales which are precisely passing here.
So, Carlo, I didn't understand your argument at all. The spots that, that Dick's pointing out are much larger than the galactic regions that had 30 microkelvin of difference there. They persisted across three experiments. We're not expecting any better measurement of those ever in the future because the cosmic variance is limited. I mean, they're much larger than that. Yeah. The significance compared to that galaxy to the galactic template is huge, and the only question you have to ask Dick is whether there's enough information there versus cosmic variance. Isn't that true?
Yeah, I mean it's really. I mean it's. I agree with you that the fact that it existed across three different completely independent.
So, I mean, yeah, well, you see residuals, differences between different solutions are at the level of 30 micro-K. That is CMB stuff, so hundreds of micro-K. So, yeah, okay.
30 micro-K across one-third of the area that Dick's talking about. I'm not saying one-third of the spots. Of the biggest spot, it's one-third of that area.
Okay.
Particular statistics. So the only, either you go with the full Monty like we go and doing component separation models and so on, or the best we can do as Planck is to offer you four solutions and you go for it and see whether, you know, it depends on the solution, your result depends on the solution. It may very well be that on your particular statistics, and we have examples of this, you know, it does not project very well on it. I mean, for instance, on some of the FNL stuff, we found that not every foreground projects very well on the specific shapes, right? I mean, if you do the scalar product. So that's the same thing. I mean, there might, I'm pretty sure that there are patterns there which are very robust. And they might, even though they might be smaller than 30 micro-K.
I just wanted to bring up the issue of, you know, what is cosmic variance and is it relevant to a map? First of all, the term cosmic variance refers to something which makes a lot of assumptions about the universe, which may or may not be correct. And what you have is a map of the sky, and you can make that map more precise. It's not true that you can't make a better map. It may be true that you can't interpret a particular model of the universe any better, but that model, the idea of cosmic variance is very much rooted in what you assume about the universe. And your assumptions may be wrong, so you can make a better map. You can get more precise. You can map out given regions. And in the cases of non-Gaussianity, the whole concept of what is cosmic variance takes on a very different meaning. So I guess the term gets thrown around a lot. Saying that we're cosmic variance limited, and if you go back to Ned Wright saying there's no reason to do anything better than what was, you know, proposed for WMAP in 1 year because you're cosmic variance limited at that point, it doesn't make any sense when you're talking about a map which has, you know, 10 million pixels in it at the moment, and you could make a map which has, you know, a gigapixel if you took, you know, one arc minute beam everywhere. So I'd like to have some discussion about that. Is that, you know, where is this concept of cosmic variance really truly relevant in these discussions? And what assumptions are underlying just the invoking of it?
I mean, it's the long wavelength structure, which is where the cosmic variance comes in, because you roll the dice and it would look different. It's just a question of whether that structure is an anomaly from the point of view of Gaussian random statistics. This region right here, which isn't well done for the map because it's always oriented towards the edge of it, this one right here is you know, an anomaly. It's a true anomaly. What it is yet to be understood. And your eye would say we've got some other anomalies, and Chuck Bennett would say that it's just the roll of the dice. And it may be, but it certainly the eye gets drawn to it, and so do the models. And of course, the other thing that we did with Planck is we aggressively cut sky out in the final likelihood code because we were being conservative, so it doesn't grab onto those regions. But anyway, we've already had that discussion.
So the chat.
have some people about the low quadrupole, for example. We just had that discussion with Uros over lunch. I mean, WMAP quadrupole, Planck quadrupole are not the same numbers. The numbers are derived assuming cosmic variance and the likelihood available for interpretation of what's on the sky. They're obviously very heavily subject to uncertainty of what you just asked, the very large scale structure features like the one crossing the galactic plane there. So are we on solid ground there? No. Is it important for ultimate fidelity of interpretation of model fitting? For most models, no, because cosmic variance flares up and it sort of doesn't matter whether it's 2.3, 2.7 sigma or something in the quadrupole. That's just sort of an elusive issue. From purist point of view, you'd like to know what quadrupole is on the sky, wouldn't you? It's a fixed pattern, it's largest scales, it's very well measured. So I don't have an answer for Phil. I mean, I don't know what the question really is even. I mean, when you get to this map and you start interpreting it through the model fitting with random elements described by cosmic variance, it's one question. To get to this map, you don't work with it. You work with multi-frequency information, different resolution from map to map and so forth. Different issues are coming into the play. And preferably, you do component separation, not taking advantage of component separation. When the problem is mixed together and you simultaneously derive CMB and galactic components, well, you start mixing things and you don't really know. So that's why you have four maps done very different ways. Compare them. You've seen the deviations. Make your judgment.
Well, the point I'm trying to make is make a map of the sky.
Make a map of the sky and you decimate 6 megapixels, which is approximately what you have in terms of independent beams on the sky, into 6 parameters, or you know, whatever many parameters you want, which is a small number. And you're assuming that those parameters describe the universe. But suppose one of those pixels, just one, happened to be something which was highly significant, and you just said there's no reason to measure any further because we know we're cosmic variance limited, yet your universe is not interpretable in the sense of what you mean by cosmic variance limited. And you know, suppose Dick Bond's face was up there, okay? And at the moment, we just can't find Dick Bond's face on that map. But you know, if we look harder, we'll find Dick Bond's face.
I found Stephen Hawking's initials.
Yeah, we have Stephen Hawking's initials, okay. And Dick Bond is definitely not Gaussian random statistics, as far as I can tell. I mean, he's highly non-Gaussian, highly inhomogeneous, and highly anisotropic.
Okay. And rather intermittent.
And very intermittent, yes, extremely, yes. Maybe
before.
A time-varying universe.
Uncertainty encapsulated in cosmic variance is important. In component separation, it shouldn't be. Preferably, you would have such a dense frequency coverage that you would be just spectrally rejecting CMB and leaving components and solving them by spectral properties, as astronomers do. Cosmic variance doesn't come into the play, so I actually agree with you. Of course, you should not think about cosmic variance when you solve component separation problems. It's just a limitation of number of available frequencies and intrinsic properties of the data that force you to often do things simultaneously, end up with mediocre product, that's all.
Okay, we have a minute, so I'll ask another question. So, my good friend George Estatio, who doesn't like anomalies, and felt that ESA was trying to make him say anomalies at the press conference, pointed the finger at the possibility of zodiacal light doing something strange. Any comment on that?
On most of the data, let's say the frequencies in which the zodiacal light should be important. So I don't think it play any role.
Yes, so that I can do a lot of stuff. Which one in particular do you have in mind when you ask the question?
What? Yeah, we did look at...
Yeah, well, so that's the... that's the quiz moment for the room. Do you actually know where the ecliptic plane is on this map? Okay, well, and then you can have terms of discussion established. So if you don't, then there is nothing to talk about. Do you know, Carlo?
I remember it's some
can you show the ecliptic
there.
Plane?
I think George is off. It's
not
a bit from where the center is.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, but we do have a little bit of constraints. I mean, we spend a fair amount of energy to actually look at survey differences and evaluate how much there might be. We actually found it at some frequencies, mapped it to, well, actually, yeah, you find it. We found it. I mean, we found traces in the highest angular, highest frequency channels. And so we have some idea about the pattern that you can confront with, you know, we cannot guarantee that there are no residuals, of course. I mean, that's a very different story. But at least you can, we have some idea of the amplitude, and you can sort of see, well, confront your favorite model with it, see whether it's likely to change your answer.
For the landscape theory, do you know what zodiacal light is?
Oh.
No.
Roughly speaking, playing on the solar system. So the ecliptic plane cuts on this map like that. That's where it is. And its phases are directly measured in high frequency maps that Francois showed and some others showed. So at 857 gigahertz, at 545, we see it. There are models which extrapolate its emission profile to lower frequencies. It was looked for and it wasn't found in a sense of detecting it. In the maps, like the ones that contribute mostly to this one, 143 gigahertz, for example. So the zodiacal emission is too weak. So in the context of what Dick and Dutch saw George, and the ecliptic question and the reviled hemisphere, so what we're pointing to is this complex on the sky in CMB, which would be in one side of ecliptic sky versus this one. The issue is there association with the geometry of the solar system, okay? So direct emission comes from the plate. It's not even seen here. You would speculate it's made in there. There is no indication I know of for which one side of solar system called south versus north would be a little bit more than the other, okay? So in that sense, we're dismissing it. Coincidences that people keep talking about come from the type of analysis which imported objects called Maxwell vectors for directivity description in some constructs on the sky, for geometry description at lower equivalence to multiples. Some of these were found pointing into the ecliptic plane, okay? One or two vectors in a set of a few. That's where people from Cleveland said, oh my God. One of the Maxwell vectors is pointing to the ecliptic plane. It's probably a solar system effect. That's what we're still carrying through. And it comes over and over, and it will probably never go away. But that's what it's understood.
You have a microphone here, Dick.
This is undoubtedly stupid, but because we've actually got quite a few surveys, can we actually do any kind of, I mean, we obviously do survey differences and all of that, but is there actually a time analysis for movement of the solar system that lets us actually maybe do orientation aspects that we can actually get, you know, a time separation that could actually do further component separation, as it were?
Yeah, we in principle.
Didn't really finish its mission when the other two instruments were done, because exactly the acoustic frame related to the light emission is time dependent. It varies on a yearly basis, half a yearly basis. And the models are poor because physical modeling of that is like modeling climate on Earth. And accuracy wasn't sufficient to convince him to remove it from the data, and it went on and on for years. And some of that is carried into plant by Ken Ganga in Paris, and some of that work is done on plant. And there is a paper this week that was just released devoted to that. So, to people who are invested in this specific part of astronomy.
But we did find that it was worse to actually try to correct for our understanding of the zodiacal light rather than just leave it in there and let the component separation blind to actually take care of it, that is to say, to remove it blindly. It was something, a little bit of a shock to us, I mean, to be frank, because we went to the, we worked to the, to try to actually correct so HFI data for that, and we found that it was actually probably better just to do nothing.
Exactly.
Do it at the component separation level.
So the complementarity between the four approaches that were used can be a little bit of a help here, because in two of them we have a physical parameterization of foregrounds, in which the zodiacal light was not parameterized and included in the fit. The other ones do not know any, ignore completely everything about, do just a minimum variance. No? So we compare solutions from one class to the other. If one is a, one treats the minimum, the other not, we should be able to see due to the galaxy. Instead, we see residuals on the galaxy, but nothing which goes as the intense emission regions of the galaxy. Okay, so. I think
the coffee now calls, and we reconvene at 4:00.